and the internet love all the strange things that come out of Florida. Oddities like pythons swallowing alligators, creative criminals, and the Scientology Worldwide headquarters make for a fascinating look at a state many people only know for beaches, NASA, and Disney World. In the new book, Oh Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country, Tampa Bay Times staff writer Craig Pittman presents a fun and fact-filled investigation into why the Sunshine State is the weirdest, but also the most influential state in the United States. Again, the name of the book is Oh Florida, and it's a pleasure to welcome Craig Pittman to the roundtable this morning. Craig, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
You obviously live in Florida. What brought you to the subject of looking to what Florida means and its weirdness?
The presidential election coming up. I know that every 4 years the whole nation looks at Florida in some dismay because we tend to be the swingingest of swing states. And so I figured the time was right to try and write a book that explains Florida, explains, you know, yes, an awful lot of weird stuff happens here, but also some pretty cool stuff as well, things that probably influence your life without you even realizing that there's a Florida connection.
Okay, so I want to get into that in a moment. But when it comes to the presidential election, of course, this became glaringly obvious in 2000.
Yes.
Could what happened in 2000 in the race between George W. Bush and Al Gore, in your opinion, have happened in any other state?
Oh, good heavens, no. No. It happened here because there were so many very Florida factors at work there. You had Catherine Harris, who was the Secretary of State, and yet, even though she was in charge of administering the election laws, she admitted she really didn't understand them at all. You had a legislature that was poised to do everything they could to elect one candidate. You had problems with the ballot in Palm Beach County. In the book, I mentioned that this is the election that guaranteed nobody will name a child Chad for another 20 years at least.
Carl Hiaasen is one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite authors, also one of my favorite guests. He has a blurb in your book that says it is hilarious, creepy, and sobering. When it comes to that weirdness of Florida, do you think that is what ultimately attracts so many people to the state?
Not necessarily the weirdness, but maybe the factors that create the weirdness, that sense of, you know, hey, come on down, you know, have a good time, you know, you only live once, grab for the brass ring and don't worry about the consequences. And of course, the consequences do occur rather frequently, and they do tend to be rather dire. One of the prime examples I like to mention is, you know, we're the state that's known for second and third and fourth chances. Carlo Ponzi, after he invented the Ponzi scheme in Massachusetts and was caught, he fled to Florida and got involved in a real estate fraud.
Now, one of the things that you point out in the book is this history and the oddity of Florida, what makes it distinct, goes back many, many, many decades and centuries.
Yes, yes, absolutely. As early as 1915, you see stories about Florida being this place that's full of rip-off artists, you know, people who will say anything to sell you land. Of course, in the 1920s land boom, it became such a notorious topic that it was the subject of the very first Marx Brothers movie, The Coconuts, where Groucho plays a shady Florida real estate salesman who tells customers, oh, you can get any kind of house you want. You can even get stucco. Oh, how you can get stucco. So we have this long history of doing very outrageous things just to get people's attention and get them to buy. One of the examples I mentioned in the book from the 1920s is Carl Fisher, who basically invented Miami Beach in order to promote it. He invited newly elected President Herbert Hoover down to play golf and then sent out as his caddy an elephant that he had bought. And so that picture, if the concept of going viral had existed in the 1920s, that's what you would say that picture became. It became this image of Florida as a place where just about anything can happen.
We call Florida the Sunshine State, but you make the point in the book that it's actually quite disaster prone when it comes to the weather.
Yes, Florida is trying to kill us. we're the lightning capital of America. We get hit by more hurricanes than anywhere else. We also get more sinkholes than anywhere else, and we are the shark attack capital of the world. And yet we call it paradise. So, you know, come on down to visit.
Not to mention the wildlife encounters and nature. And, of course, this made the news most recently with the tragedy that happened at Disney World with an alligator. But when it comes to strange wildlife encounters, the state that helped produce the Endangered Species Act, as well as the National Wildlife Sanctuary System, is responsible for a lot of natural weirdness.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And in my regular job as a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times, I cover environmental issues, which means I get to write about pythons battling alligators in the Everglades, a religious cult that smuggled in giant African land snails for a religious ritual, and they got loose, and so now the state has trained dogs to sniff out snail mucus to try and find them all. And, you know, the taxpayers footing the bill for the breeding of endangered rats at a Florida zoo. So all kinds of wild and weird stuff happens here related to animal encounters. Like you said, one of my favorites that I always like to point out is, you know, one of the cool things about Florida is we have manatees. We have several thousand manatees swimming in our waterways, and people love to see them. So that's very cool. But then we also have the sort of the kooky side of Florida, where some people think it's okay to jump on their backs and try and ride them around like a carousel horse, you know, because, hey, that's what you do with an endangered species, right?
Many people who come to Florida first, and perhaps the reason for coming to Florida is because of Disney World. The history of Disney World goes back almost half a century, 50 years or so. How much did the state change as a result of that, of all that land being purchased and becoming a tourist mecca?
It was a huge change. That land was almost completely undeveloped at the time, and Walt Disney flew over it on November 22nd, 1963, the day Kennedy was shot, and saw that was where two major highways crossed, Interstate 4 and the Florida Turnpike, and he said, "That's it. That's the spot I want." And so he worked with an attorney who had previously worked with the CIA and the mafia and people who were running drugs in order to create these shell corporations that would buy up the land so nobody would know Disney was buying it, and created this rather large area, larger than Manhattan, where he built this sort of fantasy land. And he told the people who were building it, he said, "I don't like the color of these lakes here. That's not the way it looks in my imagination. They should be blue instead of this sort of brownish color." And they told him, "If you have enough money to spend, we can make them whatever color you want, Mr. Disney." And so they just pulled out all the stops with that. And Florida had turned to tourism as a major industry before that. In fact, the Florida tourism industry was actually started by Harriet Beecher Stowe after the Civil War. She moved down here in the, you know, as the Uncle Tom's Cabin author. She got lots of attention for promoting Florida. But it didn't really take off until Disney World was built and began attracting people from all around the world. And now, you know, in addition to having 20 million people living here, we get 100 million visitors every year. And that's part of the reason why we have, you know, so many people crashing their cars into each other and chasing each other around with machetes as they fight over parking spaces and so forth, is we just have so many people here.
You do make a great point, as we've been discussing in the book, about why Florida and how Florida is so wild and why it's weird and why these things happen. But one of the points that comes out of the book very strongly is, according to you anyway, that's okay.
Yes. I tell people you should embrace the weird, you know, let your Florida freak flag fly, because that's part of what makes this the most interesting state in the union. And if you want to live somewhere boring, you know, where you open the paper and you get the same dull news every day, you know, move to Wyoming or something like that. But if you live in Florida, every day you look at the news, you're going to see something where you go, "Whoa, what were they thinking? What happened?" Or, and this is a common, only in Florida would that happen. You know, you'll see stories about a woman who wanted to be a mermaid, and so she's practicing with her fake tail in the community pool, and the homeowners association tells her, "You can't do that because it violates our no fins policy." or a guy who got into a fight with his girlfriend and grabbed his pet alligator out of the bathtub and started swinging it around as a weapon. I mean, just the zaniest stuff, but that's all part of this vast fabric of life here in Florida.
Well, again, going back to Carl Hiaasen and my many conversations with him, he has said that it's hard to make up fiction because yes. it's so wild, just reality. So
yes.
for you in reporting as a reporter in your day job, as you mentioned, and reporting on that reality, I would assume it's never a dull moment.
No, it's not. I mean, one of the things I mentioned in one chapter is that the secret about being a journalist in Florida is that it's actually pretty fun. You have no idea what kind of wild stuff's going to come up, no matter what your beat is. For instance, if you're covering politics right now, one of the things you're writing about is the U.S. Senate candidate, a guy running to replace Marco Rubio, who freely admits that he sacrificed a goat and drank its blood. So I asked him, what did the goat's blood taste like? And he said, it tasted like fame.
Wow. And how did the people react to that? I mean, there are obviously places in this country who would be aghast and say, oh my God, we don't want that person to be our representative in the Senate. But you make it sound like in Florida, that's just another day at the office.
Well, I think it might be unusual for a political candidate, at least.
Yes.
But you have to bear in mind that Florida is the court case that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court that said it was absolutely legal and in keeping with the First Amendment for people to have animal sacrifices. that practice could not be outlawed. It was part of religious freedom.
There you go. What do you make of your political candidates and their national aspirations? Obviously, we can look at Jeb Bush. We can go to Marco Rubio. What does it say about bringing those values that were essential and popular for them in the state of Florida and then making that leap to a national stage?
Well, one of the points I make in the book is that nobody from Florida has ever been elected president, and when you see who the candidates are, you can probably figure out why. Instead, Florida has been much more successful at thwarting people's national political ambitions. Bear in mind, it was reporters from Florida who blew the whistle on Gary Hart in 1988, having an affair with a Miami actress, quote unquote, and on board a boat called the Monkey Business.
Yes.
The Watergate burglars came from Florida, and you know that led to the downfall of Richard Nixon. And in fact, the investigator for the Miami-Dade prosecutor's office is the one who made the connection between the burglars and the committee to reelect the president. In fact, there was even a Florida man involved in the Lincoln assassination. He bungled his assignment, of course. But when you see I honestly think that one of the reasons this particular election cycle has been so off the charts strange is because there were so many people from Florida involved in it on both sides, because you not only had Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, but also Governor Mike Huckabee was running, and he now lives in the Florida Panhandle. Dr. Ben Carson retired to Palm Beach County, which has been the home of Rush Limbaugh since 1996. And I always call Donald Trump part-time Florida man because he has a very opulent home in Palm Beach as well.
Right.
And then on the Democratic side, you've got Debbie Wasserman Schultz is running the Democratic National Committee, and she's from Florida.
So why, and this is a question that many of us here in the Northeast want to know, Craig, why do so many of our people want to retire to your state?
Well, our weather is the big reason. It's pretty warm most of the year round. You don't have to contend with snow and ice and sleet and so forth, number one. But number two, we have no state income tax here and haven't had since the 1920s. And that's been a big attraction for a lot of people, too. Also, one of the reasons so many people come here to try to start over it when they've messed up somewhere else is that under our state law, official homestead is protected even if you file for bankruptcy. So that tends to attract a lot of people who have messed up elsewhere. Also, I honestly think that was one of the reasons O.J. Simpson moved here after he was acquitted.
Well, the book is endlessly fascinating, very enjoyable, and very funny as well. It is O Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. The book is published by St. Martin's Press. Craig Pittman, thank you very much for joining us. A great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book, O Florida, by Craig Pittman. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.